Hi, everybody. I'm Lori Atchley, and I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God and my sponsor in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober since June 3rd of 1989. And thank you. I would first like to thank Monica for asking me to speak. I love to talk about myself, but I don't like to speak in front of a bunch of people. But it is a pleasure to be asked. I mean, a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's cleaning ashtrays or speaking. It's a privilege. Today, and I'm going to probably jump around a lot. Today, I get to go to meetings. I get to have friends. I get to not drink one day at a time. My drinking, you probably won't relate a whole lot. I was a punk kid. I did not drink until I was 18 years old. I was a goody two-shoes. When my mom said, do something, I did it. I went to school every day. I think I skipped one time in my whole life, and I was so paranoid that I was going to get caught. I didn't like getting in trouble. And I had a sister who was a party animal, and today I have names. By the way, I'm number five of six girls. No boys, all girls. No wonder my mom couldn't keep a husband, because there was way too many women in the house. And either once a month or all month long, it was crazy. But I had a sister ahead of me that today, I have little nicknames for all my sisters, and she would be my crackhead sister. And she before she got into drugs, she was smoking pot, but she was drinking, and she would come home drunk, and I would see her friends cramming food down or anything just to soak up the alcohol. And my mom was always asleep on the couch because my mom worked. Like I said, we didn't have a dad in our house, and she busted her butt to do whatever she could to take care of six kids. And she was pretty much a waitress her whole life. We didn't have money. We had everything we needed. We had a lot of things we wanted. But we were dirt poor people. So I vowed I was not going to be like my crackhead sister. And I was not going to be like my mom. I was going to go to school and do what I needed to do. Except for the drugs, I turned out to be just like my crackhead sister. I never took drugs. I smoked pot one time in my life. So anyway, at 18 years old, I came to Tampa. I'm originally from Punta Gorda, down south. And I was born and raised there. Between there and Michigan, we moved around a lot because my mom was always looking for something better. You know, it's going to be better over there. And I still think that's still one of my problems today. And I'm sorry, I feel like I'm getting deep in my voice for some reason. I've felt it lately. I quit smoking, and I feel this deepness in my voice coming on. I don't know what that means. But anyway, so we would go back and forth from Michigan to Florida, you know, looking for the better, for better things to come. And I got really mad in my junior year that my mom decided once again to move us back down to Florida. And I was disgusted. I was so mad because I was finally, I get along better with my girlfriends from junior high and high school when I was in Michigan than I do with the people I went to school with in Florida and graduated with. You know, I mean, we were just, I loved it. Thank you. And I'm shaking too, so. I loved it because I felt more a part of, I felt accepted, and, you know, there were only probably, I don't even know how many people were in my school up there, but down here I graduated with 430 people. So I wasn't special. I was nothing. I just went to school and I went to work, and I needed that. I needed that something to make me feel better. I'm just like my mother. Something always has to make me feel better. And so anyway, jumping around, about 18 years old, I was going to the bars at 17. To tell you how much of a people pleaser I was, I asked my mom if I could go to the bar at 17. And she said no for a long time, but she finally said okay, which she is one crazy lady. But I wasn't drinking, and she trusted me, and I wasn't drinking. I would have Coke. But when I was 18 years old, which, you know, technically I was an adult, I came up to Tampa with my friend, And somewhere between Apollo Beach, because that's where our other friend lived, and we stayed with him, and it was between Apollo Beach and Tampa, I got drunk for my first time. I'd had little sips here and there, you know, growing up, but I got drunk, and I loved it. It was so much fun. I don't remember anything about it, but I knew it was fun. I couldn't tell you. I think I got sick that night. I think I passed out that night. I think I blacked out that night. And it's baseball season, and I love talking in baseball season. First time I talked here at Saturday Night Fever, it was baseball season. And it just kind of came out, and I just loved it, so now I'm picking it up. But I am a three-out drinker. I'm a blackout, pass-out, put-out drinker. And I tell you what, those three things mostly happened every time I drank. Not all of them. But that's the kind of person I was. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. I had no self-esteem. I had no self-respect. I didn't respect anybody else. I didn't care. Alcohol allowed me not to care, and it allowed me to do what I wanted to do anyway. Just I could use the drinking for the excuse. So anyway, 18 years old, I had my first drunk, and I loved it, and you know, I just went about my life. I remember I just drank. I didn't drink consistently. There were periods where I drank every day when I could. But I didn't drink every day. There were periods when I drank every weekend when I could. But I didn't drink every weekend. I just drank as often as I could, as much as I could. I mean, that's what my drinking was like. I just drank whenever I could and as much as I could. And whatever stopped me, whether it was, you know, getting sick or blackout, pass out, whatever would stop me from drinking, stop me. I'm a party girl, Johnny. Yeah, I'm a party girl. I'm a bar drinker. I love parties. I love bars. I don't like sitting at home drinking. That was boring to me, and I wanted excitement. I wanted to be out and about. And so I was partying as much as I could. And I worked at this little bus company. It was actually called Southern Comfort. I loved it. I wish they would have, like, served me Southern Comfort when I was working. But I worked at this bus company, and my boss happened to be not drinking. He called himself an alcoholic, but he was not drinking. And he made a bet with me. Now, I'm like 19 years old, 19 or 20. I just started drinking at 18. And he made a bet with me that I couldn't drink for a month because he saw something in my drinking that was abnormal. And he would laugh at me because I would come in hungover. And so I said, okay, I'll take that bet. And, you know, I did. And it was only $25. And, you know, today, $25 ain't nothing. But back then, that was a whole day's pay for me. I was making $3.10 an hour. That was a whole day's pay. So you bet I'm going to do it. And I didn't lie. And I went the whole month. And I didn't drink. And I went and collected my money, and we went out and partied. And 25 bucks back then could get you a good drunk. So I got drunk. And then I didn't, none of that stuck, none of it. I never even thought about it again until the first time I had to speak in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never thought about that time that he made this deal with me. So anyway, I grew up, you know, poor, so I had a job. And I wanted to get out of town. I wanted to go somewhere because, you know, I was starting to lose friends because I was starting to be myself. I was drinking all the time. And, you know, I have a friend that lives here in Brandon. And she was one of my drinking buddies way back. And I remember her saying to me one time, Lori, when you drink, you act like you're 15 years old. Now I was 20. Come on, you know. Now I look and say 20. Oh my gosh, I was a punk. But you know, so and now she's one of my closest friends because she wants me to be sober and she's happy for what I have in my life. And I've lost pretty much all those old drinking buddies. Not all of them, but most of them. But anyway, so I'm 20 years old. I must leave because, you know, I'm getting a little tired of my life. Something's got to change. So I joined the military. And that was a big culture shock because I was lazy. I did not exercise. I hated exercise. you know, I get thrown into basic training. Now, first of all, I go in on the Fat Boy program because I'm overweight. I mean, I'm going in, coming up to Tampa. I remember that too, coming up to Tampa and having to weigh in, and I was already overweight. You know, I was just something else. Anyway, I wanted in so bad that I did unspeakable things to get in the military. And in basic training, the first day, I mean, they fed me four times that day, and you know what? I ate every time they let me eat. And so I went in and had to weigh in, and they put me on the Fat Boy program right away. But I was in total shock. I mean, I was lazy. I didn't exercise. What was I going to do? I mean, I got sick every time I had to run in basic training. I was like, oh, my God, I just can't keep up with you people. And I couldn't do sit-ups. And it was just horrible. And my life just got worse. I got through basic training. Now I would call my mom. Now, she loves to talk about this because, I already told you I was on the Fat Boy program, so I don't care now. But she loves to tell me how I would call and cry that I was on the Fat Boy program. And they wouldn't, they're just so mean to me. So she likes to tease me about that now, and I'm kind of embarrassed about it now, but, she's my mom, and she pretty much can get away with whatever she wants. I moved on from Lackland Air Force Base. I went to Denver, to Lowry Air Force Base for my schooling, and I, a little drunk like me, I went into Intel, and I am living proof that you do not have to be smart to get into Intel. You just have to have kept your nose clean. And they asked me a million times, are you sure you never smoked pot? Did you even experience with it? No. I mean, they did not believe me, and I hadn't up to that point. Off I go I'm in Colorado, and I'm drinking now. I'm drinking as much as, they'll let me. I did my time in basic where, some people can drink, I guess, in basic. I never even tried. All these things that I thought, that's why I'm not an alcoholic. I never tried to drink in basic training. I never tried to drink in tech school when I wasn't allowed. Once they let me, though, I was off and running. And more unspeakable things, not even to do with weight, when I was there because of drinking. So I knew things were getting bad. So I was leaving Lowry Air Force Base, and I was going to go to... They told me I was going to Nebraska. And I said, what state is that in? I did not want to go there. I mean, I'm like, Omaha? Holy cow. That's like that Animal Kingdom thing. I did not want to go to Nebraska. I am a Florida girl. And I put everything on the East Coast or West Coast and everything on the East Coast. That's what I put on my dream sheet. And I got stuck right in the middle of the United States. God had a plan because I was there, I got there in 1986, and I went there with the intention of not drinking. I knew that things were starting. I was embarrassed by some of the things I had done in Denver, and I was like, okay, I need to clean some things up. I need to quit being like this, so I need to take a break from drinking. And so I showed up, and I even told I don't consider her a friend, but she went to the tech school with me, and she was going on to Offutt with me, and she said she told all the people there that I was a geek because I didn't drink, because I had told her I'm not doing that anymore. I'm done. And, that lasted for a while. I was not in the barracks at the time. I was in this billeting and stuck off, away from all the people that I would later become party friends with. But so I didn't have that opportunity for a while. And then when I got into the barracks, it took a while because they heard I was a geek. Nobody would ask me to do anything or go anywhere because they were all party animals. But this one girl thought, well, gosh, I'll ask her to go with me, and she can drive me home after I get drunk. That didn't work because I got drunk, and she had to drive herself home. I don't have any idea how I got home that night. Who knows? Who knows? Anyway, if I even made it home. That started all over my drinking. More drinking, anything I could do to drink. I was coming, we would go out on hump day, Wednesday night, and then we Thursday they had these twofers on Thursday nights, two buds for one, and you know we would drink quite a bit of beer, and so Thursday night was party night. You know, you're getting ready for the weekend, and then Friday night I had to be to work at this particular time. I had to be to work at 5 o'clock in the morning because we had these briefings that went to the general of the base. And I had to be there to support these briefings. Now, I don't pay attention at work because I didn't even like what I was doing. But I was supposed to be there at 5 o'clock. But I'm getting home from the bar at 2. If I'm alone, I might go to sleep right away. If I'm not, it might be a little while longer. And there were many times when I was getting called from the dormitory telephone, I was getting called to get my butt into work. And so I show up to work, and, you know, I'm still hungover and still drunk, and my boss finally had a talking, and she said, here's some gum, and I don't chew gum, anyone who knows me. She's stuffing gum down my throat, and she said, you need to watch it, because you're going to get in trouble. I stuck my neck out for you. So anyway, my best friend left and went to the Philippines, and I was crushed. I had, you know, I am one who will have one, maybe two friends, and she left me, and, you know, I didn't have anyone left. So I just went to the bar and drank and picked up guys. And, you know, sometimes I would drive home and sometimes I wouldn't. It all depended on how the things went that night or that, you know, for the night. Well, I had this I don't know what she, NCOIC or something. She was in charge, or officer in charge, or non-commissioned. Anyway, she would say, she's this really tall, broad black woman, and she was very intimidating. And she'd say, Airman Atchley, did you get lucky last night? I saw your car at the bar this morning. And so, you know, and she didn't keep things quiet. She said them out loud. So anyway, finally, New Year's Eve of 1988, I'm one of those amateurs out there driving around and drinking. And I was on base at a party, intended to stay on base for the party, and I was at a party right up from my dorm room. So even if I got wasted drunk, I could just roll down the hill, go to bed, and be fine. But midnight hit, and I needed to go find something to do, some partying to do. So I got in my car, and I left the base. And I think my ticket said 12:15, so 15 minutes after midnight, I had already slammed my car into somebody. Now, I'd already been down one side of town. I was on my way back. I hit somebody, and they pulled out in front of me. And, yeah, it's all their fault. That's another pattern in my life. So, anyway, you know, what do you do? I wanted to run, but I knew I couldn't run. I knew I couldn't run fast enough. And the guy that I hit, I knew. I had one date with him. No. That was one date. When I had that accident, I was thinking, dang, the one guy I should have slept with, I didn't. So anyway, I hit this guy, and I got picked up by the cops and taken to jail. I'd never been in jail, never, you know, they put the cuffs on me, and, you know, I was so humiliated. But anyway, I went to jail that night, and they told me to call a friend who hadn't been drinking. Well, it's New Year's Eve. I don't know anyone that doesn't drink. But I called this guy, and he had been drinking, but I guess he passed. He came and picked me up and took me back to the base. Now I have no car. Now I'm in big trouble with the military, big trouble. It could have only been worse had I got my DUI on base. But I got lucky and got it off base. So I immediately lost my job because I had a security clearance, and they don't let drunks have security clearances for a period of time. So they sent me to this other place where we would box up forms and send them out to the different branches that needed them. And so that's what I was doing. And I did that for 7 months. But so that was New Year's Eve. My commander issued a 60-day non-drinking restriction. He could not do anything more. He did everything he could to me, except I didn't get the Article 15 because I wasn't on base. I did have to give a briefing because that was our job. We gave briefings. I had to give a briefing in front of my entire squadron about my DUI, and I was the one, when other people would get DUIs, I would say, call me. I will come and get you. Now, I'm drunk. I don't know what they're going to do, but call me. I'll come get you. I used to say that. Now, I'm the one giving the briefing, and I had to show a picture of my car. Now, I had a little piece of POS, Datsun B210. It was green. It had a push-button start. This is where I sunk to. You know, 2 years before that, I had a brand spanking new Toyota Corolla off the showroom floor. Didn't do anything, any kind of negotiations, because I don't know how to do that. Bought it for sticker price. I mean, but, you know, 2 years later, I couldn't afford that car, and I ended up with this POS. And so now my car's all smashed up. I got, you know, they made me take a picture and show the entire squadron, and I was so embarrassed. But anyway, people where I worked in this new area I worked in, we were all delinquents. You know, we were all troublemakers, and they told me, you know, you had an accident. Now, I better skip back. I had 6 counts against me that night. I was DUI. I was driving 54 and a 35. I had an accident. I had no license, no insurance, and no registration on me. I have no idea where they were, and I argued with them in jail over the registration, so he let me off. And when I went back to my car to get the little stuff I had in there, I could not find the registration, so I got lucky there. But what does it matter? 5 out of 6 counts. So anyway, all these people were telling me how to work it. You know, okay, they're gonna, you can't get the diversion program. They had this program called the diversion program where you would go to AA and get a card signed. You had to go how often they told you, and then every month you had to go in and meet with them, like a little 5-minute session, so they could check your card and make sure it was getting signed and you're doing your stuff. So I'm like, yeah, well, I don't get that option. So I'll just go to jail. And I don't want that option anyway because I don't want to go to AA. So I'll just go to jail. That's okay with me. I'll do, you know, I'll con them in. I'll work it out. I'll do weekends so I don't lose, you know, get in trouble with the military. We'll work it out. I'll go to jail. And that's what I wanted to do. I did not want to go to AA. I wanted to go to jail. So I went out to plead guilty, and the prosecutor asked for a continuance and told me to get a lawyer because, you know, he knew I was in big trouble. So I got a lawyer, and today that lawyer is actually a judge. He got me in the diversion program. I call him every 5 years and let him know I'm still sober because he told me, and I did not know until just a couple years ago that he was in AA. Someone else told me. He's never told me. But I like to call it because his big thing was, you know, it's 6 months out of your life. What do you got to lose? You got to go anyway. Might as well listen. So I had no idea. All these people, after I got sober, when I was actually listening, I heard people talk about signing their own cards. Gosh, I wish I would have heard that. But when I was getting sober, I would have quit going and had my card signed. I don't wish that now. Back then I did. So anyway, so I start going to meetings. Now, I'm 20 days sober before I get a sponsor. So I'm just kind of going to meetings and getting that little card signed. Getting my card signed. They had told me I had to get a sponsor. They called it a contact person. I think if they would have called it a sponsor, I would have been like, oh, hell no. Excuse me. Because I heard people in meetings talking about sponsors. And where I come from, they're mean. I mean, what I heard people say, my sponsor told me to do this and told me to do that. And I was just freaking out. And I'm like, I don't need me one of them. But they called it a contact person. I'm like, oh, just someone I have to check in with every once in a while. So I was standing in line. I mean, this woman was very popular. I was standing in line to ask this woman to be my sponsor. I had no idea how long she'd been sober. And I heard her say to one of the people who she was talking to, well, you have to call me every day and go to 4 meetings a week. And I turned around and walked out the door. I'm like, I ain't going to, that they told me I got to go to 2. I ain't going to 4. And I certainly ain't calling someone every day. So on my way out, some other lady caught me. And she drove me back to the base, and we talked. And, you know, she didn't say anything like, hey, Lori, I think you got a problem. I didn't talk in meetings. I would look down at my shoes. I didn't, you know, I didn't care to be there. And she never said anything to me. But what I said to her was, you know, I don't drink like an alcoholic, but I think like an alcoholic. And if you've been here for any amount of time, thinking like an alcoholic is way worse than drinking like an alcoholic. I decided, you know, this woman called me an alcoholic. She never said anything to me, but that's how I felt. So I called another woman that I happened to see at this, it's a meeting. And by the way, it's a meeting very much like this one. This is my favorite meeting in Tampa. I think this is the best meeting in Tampa, because it's very, you know, enthusiastic. And these people were very enthusiastic. And my later-to-be grand sponsor had just celebrated her 25-year anniversary. And I heard them talk about her, and I heard them talk about Clancy. And I'm like, you know what? Who cares? You guys are a bunch of drunks. I don't care about Clancy. Who the heck is Clancy? And who the heck is Peggy? And who the heck is Dick? Who cares about these people? They did. But this woman got up, and when she said her name, my head flew up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? She was one of my creditors that I went back to, I don't know, millions of times trying to get more money. But she knew better. So anyway, I knew that she had been going to this meeting, and I avoided her area because I didn't want her to see me there. And when they told me I had to get a contact person, and this woman took me back to the base, and I didn't want to ask her. I called this woman, my creditor, and I said, did I see you Tuesday night at the St. Mary's Church? I didn't want to tell her I was at an AA meeting, just in case it wasn't her. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, I got to get a contact. I'm in diversion. I got to get a contact person. She goes, oh, do you think you have a problem? I said, no. And she said, oh, so you're here for the education. And I believed her. I said, yes. I thought I had her wrapped around my finger, and off we were going. I left. That was on a Friday, and that Monday I left, came to Florida for like almost a month. And I had to go to meetings, so I came to Florida. I got my card signed. Some guy at the meeting I went to gave me this silver medallion with the hands on it, and it said, to thine own self be true. And I'm like, what the heck is this? I didn't know. But I heard this guy talk, and I went to school with the son, and I was like, hey, that's a cool story. It was so exciting. I was at a meeting, and a woman walked in and threw a cup of coffee all over this guy, and I just thought, yeah, that's cool. I had no idea. So anyway, I stayed sober when I came down here, and I had no intentions. Nobody was going to know. No one was going to be near me. This woman told me I had to call her once a week, and I had to go to whatever many meetings diversion asked. So, you know, this woman, I got her right where I want her. This is perfect. Well, let's see. That was Friday. I called her Saturday. I called her Sunday, and I called her three times on Monday. And, you know, I didn't think I wanted to get sober. There was just something there. There was something that happened. I went to the meeting with her. She conned me into going to the meeting that Friday night with her. I don't know why. But I said yes, okay, after I tried to fight it. I went to the meeting. I didn't hear anything in that meeting except her talk about having drank something with cigarette butts in it. And I'm like, I am so above that. That is just so wrong. I did that sober on accident. She did it drinking. Anyway, I didn't hear anything, but I heard all these people saying, oh, you're going to go to chip night? You're going to go to chip night? What's chip night? I had been going to meetings, and I knew this guy, Chip, was going to meetings. I thought it had something to do with him. They have this big deal once a month where they give out chips for sobriety, and they have a main speaker, one big speaker, and then they have a dance afterwards. So it is a sober meat market, and you will love it if that, you know, if you love to dance and you're new, that's where you go. And so we frequented there all the time. Now, I was better sober than I was drinking. But I love to dance, and that's where we went. That's what we did. These people said, come go along with us. Now, I didn't go that night because I didn't know what it was. And this woman wanted to take me to Village Inn, to save me. And she brought along someone else to help her save me. And they put me on the inside of the booth because you don't put newcomers where they can run. You put them on the inside so they can't get out. And that's what they did. And they kept talking about, you just got to go to meetings and call your sponsor, stay sober, and blah, 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 blah. And I thought, yeah, you need to do that, but not me. I don't need to because I'm not one of you. So anyway, you don't know Omaha, but from that Village Inn to my frequented bar, it was only around the corner and up the street, not very far. And this woman was taking me back to the base. By the time I got to my perfect bar, I just turned and I said, I don't want to drink anymore. And I don't know what that was. I had every intention. I was at a party before I went and didn't drink. I was going back to that party to drink. I don't know what happened. I can't tell you today what happened. I just, in that moment, I didn't want to drink anymore. Now, later, I could have kicked myself because I am very much, mostly, a person of my word. And when I tell you I'll do something, I do it. And so I couldn't drink now because I told someone I didn't want to drink anymore. So then I came to Florida, stayed sober, went back. And, we got busy working the steps. I took my first fifth step at 9 months sober. And I tell you what, I was as honest as I could be. I didn't do a complete, thorough, honest fifth step until I was 18 years sober because I couldn't let go of this one secret. I just was too afraid to tell someone. And, after I told my current sponsor, I was like, I don't think I should have done that because now I'm a freak. It has been an interesting road in recovery. It's not been a bed of roses. It's not been, everything hasn't been peachy keen. I have made friends and I've lost friends. I've had friends drink. I've had friends kill themselves. I've had, all that stuff happen. And I just had a friend last year, and she was 20 years sober and drank. And she was my example of what I didn't want to be like when I moved here, because she moved away years ago to Arizona and she quit going to AA. And I told my sponsor when I moved down here, I don't want to be her. I want to go to meetings. I want to get involved. I don't want to be her. And I just found out, less than a year ago that she committed suicide, because we don't do well when we're sick and not going to AA. So that was my example. I don't have to be that person. And I can be her in a second. I've seen a lot of people with double digit sobriety go out and drink. And they don't make it back. If they make it back, they don't make it back the way they were before they started drinking. So if nothing else, I keep coming here. I keep sticking out my hand. It was hard for me coming to this meeting. It was very intimidating. I felt like I was the newcomer, and you did not greet me well enough. It had nothing to do with you. It had everything to do with me. And when I stopped whining and complaining about that and started reaching out my hand, then I got to know more people. That's been my whole sobriety. When I quit living in the problem and jumping the solution, I'm not jumping in with bells on. I'm not, dancing my way through it. Believe me, sometimes I'm kicking and screaming and scratching. I don't have many fingernails, but I got some. Life gets better. And, I did not want to speak out. To be honest, I haven't been the best in the best places. I haven't been the best example since I've been here. I thought you did, every meeting I went to did it wrong. And if you've ever moved, I think you all go through that. But at some point, you got to give it up, And it's time to give it up. It's time to just show up, suit up and show up, and do what I can to be the best example that I can be. I feel like I've had 1 year 21 times at times, and there's been times when I thought I should have, where I think I got 30 years. you know. So I'm sick. I like being sick. I don't want to ever be well, because when I'm well, I don't need you. And I got 5 minutes. So, you know, life hasn't been wonderful, but life has been life. And no matter what, all I got to do is show up. I have to maintain contact with my sponsor. It is very easy long distance to, because I kept the sponsor I have in Nebraska. It's very easy long distance to say, she don't need to know, you know. And I have friends here that hold me accountable. Where were you? You weren't at the meeting. You know, and any of you who know me, if I'm not at a meeting, post it on my Facebook. Oh, because my friends learned, they started posting on my Facebook. Hey, I didn't see you at the meeting last night. Well, my sponsor is on my Facebook. And so if I'm not calling my sponsor and telling her why I missed the meeting, then she's asking next time she talks to me, how come you weren't at your meeting? How come you're missing meetings? What are you doing? So I have to remain accountable. And whether that means I have to feel like a little kid, I don't care. I need to be accountable, because when I'm accountable only to myself, I will lie, I will skirt around, I will not do what I'm supposed to do. When I'm forced to be accountable, whether I like it or not, I can pretty much hang in there. Not perfectly, God knows. But anyway, again, Monica, thank you so much for asking me to speak, and thank you for listening.
To read all of this? Oh, man. All right. My name is Hayden, and I'm an alcoholic. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this, with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not lose it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend our attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us, to our less fortunate brothers. Thank you very much.